une production Noyau Studio.
Vous écoutez Vision, un podcast sur la photographie contemporaine. Pour cette cinquième saison de Vision, j'ai le plaisir de vous annoncer que nous sommes toujours en partenariat avec MPB, qui est la plus grande plateforme en ligne au monde pour acheter, vendre et échanger du matériel photo et vidéo d'occasion. Il y a un lien vers le site de MPB dans la description de ce podcast et sur notre propre site vision.photo. Je vous souhaite une très bonne écoute.
The image that I chose to speak about is made in a restaurant kitchen downstairs. There's no sunlight, it's dark, it's moody, and it's fast. And the image is of cooks cleaning off their shoes before service. You don't see anyone's face. You see from the knee down, they're in black kitchen shoes, Birkenstocks, clogs. You see the tile floors, and one cook is wiping off the shoe of another cook. You can see it glistening because it's wet and clean in contrast to the other shoe that has not yet been wiped. And I love this image because I think it really represents what it means to be a cook and these little things that you do to present yourself, even if no one's going to see you that's upstairs. The idea of pre-service, presenting yourself and the kind of public and private sphere of the kitchen is really interesting to me in general. And I think looking down and grabbing those fast moments that happen organically are rare and hard to do. And I was very fast with this photo and lucky to have caught it in time. But it also represents the community of cooks, you know, caring for each other. And yeah, just the dignity of caring for yourself, how you present yourself before cooking. Just reminding myself to look down, look up, not just kind of straight ahead. Things that happen really fast. I am Lucia Bell Epstein, and I'm an artist and an image maker, and I live in New York, but I split my time between there and Paris. I grew up in New York City, in the Lower East Side, on the Bowery. I don't know if you know the Bowery, but it's a strip of streets, I grew up in a neighborhood that has changed a lot over the course of my life. I never moved. I was born there, and I didn't leave until I was 18 for university, and there's a lot of restaurant supply stores with stainless steel and pots and pans and the industrial feeling juxtaposed with, you know, there's the Bowery Mission there, which has for a long time been a safe haven for people without shelter. And then there's been residential apartments, and then the new museum came in early 2000s. So the neighborhood has changed quite a bit, but growing up there, I was in the heart of it, and my early life, I'm an only child. I grew up with my parents who are both creatives and artists. I, from a young age, was focused a lot on painting and doing art classes. Cooking and photography were not something on my radar yet, and I always was grateful to be exposed to the arts just by the nature of where I lived and who my parents were. On weekends, we would go look at new expos, and on Thursday nights, we would go to gallery openings in Chelsea. And that kind of laid a foundation and created an importance for what it means to be an artist and what it means to look, and to look really hard at works of art or just everyday life. And that kind of set the stage for where I grew up. And from there, was working kind of since I was quite young. I started babysitting, and then that turned into an opportunity where the father of children that I babysat for was the head chef at a restaurant called Prune, not so far from where I grew up, and he invited me to come and spend a day staging in the restaurant when I was 13. So I skipped school and I went, and that experience became fundamental to who I am today and what I'm doing now. And I loved it. And I, on the weekends, would go back and work on Saturdays and do brunch prep and help and taste. To be someone so young, surrounded by chefs and cooks and dishwashers and people coming to eat very specific food that was sourced well and organic and local and different from the other restaurant culture happening in New York at the time was mesmerizing. And I would go in and I would clean the walk-in fridge, I would organize it, I would label it, I would shadow different chefs and cooks for the day. I would be chopping onions for 2 hours, you know, a little bit of everything, but it kind of developed a hunger in me for being around people and in environments related to food. And being next to 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds that were, you know, covered in tattoos and partying, and it was kind of a crazy time in the industry, kind of pre-Me Too movement, where everything kind of flied and you could do whatever you wanted, for better and for worse. And as a young woman watching that, it kind of forced me to grow up in a way that I hadn't before. But from there, I went to high school and I did cooking in the summers, I did catering, I did different things, but I was focused way more on academia. And by the time I was going to school, I wasn't focusing on cooking or photography at all up until that point. And so I studied in Montreal, I went to McGill for my undergrad, and I did art history and Islamic studies and communications. Very intense and rigorous academic program, which I loved. And I wanted to be a lawyer. I'd studied, prepared for the LSAT, and that was the plan. But COVID happened the year that I graduated. I didn't want to take out loans and be doing school from my computer at home. And I had an opportunity to move back home. So when I moved back to New York, I moved back to work on a cookbook to assist the process of recipe development. And so I was becoming immersed in another side of the food industry. And at the same time, I picked up another job cooking in a restaurant. And that kind of sparked my interest in food. And from there, I never kind of went back to school and to the whole idea of becoming a lawyer. And that kind of connects back to this idea of graduating and feeling like I really needed to do something with my hands and to shut off the academic side of my brain, and just to make things, to feed myself, to feed people. And that's where I became interested in cooking again and wanted to be a chef, really, and thought that that was going to be my plan in life until I was drawn to bring a camera into work one day and start shooting. All of my, you know, work professional experiences were based in the arts. I was an archivist in the studio of Lawrence Wiener. I was always around art history and taking courses in that. And so all of that now applies to the work that I make and how I see the world and how I shoot, even though the references aren't specifically photographic. They're coming from, you know, Dutch still lifes that I looked at in art history, or the memoir that I read, my favorite book by Gabrielle Hamilton, who opened the restaurant Prune that I worked at when I was 13, which I carry that book with me most times that I travel and have read it more than anything else. So I'm kind of realizing now that I would not be where I am today if it wasn't for those early, you know, painting classes and art experiences and just the context of the Bowery and so much going on, being exposed to so many different types of people and sounds and smells of food. That's my early life. At first, I thought maybe I would talk about the first time I used a camera or something like that, but really my earliest memory of related to photography would be the smell of darkroom chemicals as a kid. I grew up in a loft on the Lower East Side, like I mentioned, and my father at the time had a small color darkroom in the apartment that I grew up in. My most vivid early memories are coming home from school and sitting in the darkroom with his printer at the time, or with him when he was printing himself. But a lot of them relate to his printer, Christoph, who was from Berlin, and he would play techno music and would print so fast. And I would be in there with him, and the lights would go on and off, and it would be magic to me to see the prints come out and the spotting and all of it. But the smell was so strong that I think about it and I can smell it right now. But now when I print in the darkroom, it brings me back to that like instantly. And I think that also definitely planted a seed for me coming around and wanting to print myself. But definitely the darkroom, or, you know, going to openings really young on Thursday nights with both my parents, and being raised more around adults and artists than kids my own age. I grew up with parents who emphasized the importance of image making and creating constantly, and also failing and starting over again. I grew up in that. And my mother, Susan, is a writer and editor, and my father, Mitch, is a photographer. And they also collaborate in their practices. My mom will be responsible for most of the curation of imagery, and will write the texts that go into his books and shows, and they're very intertwined in personal and work-related things. So that was very special to grow up around. But I'm so close to them, and I think it's also because they had me later in life that the dynamic now, it doesn't feel as much of the classical parent-child, but they're like my best friends, and I work with them now as well, and I think that has changed my relationship. My mother wrote the text. I asked her to write something at the end of the book that I have coming out called Digging with Clams. And I've also started to work a bit with my father, going on set with him. He was making a film, I guess not set, going with him into the forest to help him shoot video and just be there and be a part of it and manage one of the cameras. So that has also changed the relationship with him too. But, you know, it's endless inspiration. And I would say that both of my parents have taught me the importance of not just looking, but looking harder at things and asking a lot of questions, but really just the idea of constantly creating. And even if, you know, a large percentage of that is unsuccessful, it leads to what actually is the important image or thing that you're making. I also think because I grew up with my father, I really purposefully was like, I'm not interested in photography, nor was I interested in writing with my mom. And I chose painting for most of my life as my medium. Definitely was a bit of a rebellion against what I saw in both of them and wanting to kind of carve my own way. And I think now that I am sharing a medium with my father, our work is so different. So it's really special to be able to speak with him about it. And, you know, there's not a lot of overlap. Of course, there's a huge influence no matter what, but the tools and the way that I photograph are very different than him, technically speaking. He shoots 8x10. It's a slower process, and I'm shooting more medium format, but smaller scale, 35, and it kind of allows like a breathing room so that it doesn't feel like, you know, we're using the same thing. But even so, I would love to learn 8x10, and, you know, I can go into his office, which I do quite often, and just we just talk, we look at books. He has an amazing library, and same thing with my mother. They both love to read and to look at things, and books have been so important my whole life. The idea of things existing in print, touching them, holding them, how do they feel, what fonts are being used. So I think that also has played a huge role in the way that I just live day to day and the things that I deem important and appreciate. But it's definitely been very special to now share this with them. When I think about inspiration and influence, I actually don't think so much about photography. I think of other mediums that I reference constantly when making work, before making work, afterwards, and editing. And I would say memoirs written by chefs and cooks are huge references for me. And going off of that, also cookbooks, which I collect myself and I cook from, and I use a lot as visual references of either what I don't want to do and or what I do want to do in terms of my own image making and creation. But going to other cities and countries, I try to bring back home with me a cookbook from a local chef to wherever that place is to cook from. And I look at cookbooks probably more than any other, more than photo books, actually, I would have to say. I reference a lot of old advertisements of restaurants or even like old airplane advertisements for food menus and strange things that we don't see so much today, but that have a very distinct type of color photography associated with them. There's a fast food chain called the Waffle House that's existing mainly in the South in America. And I love the Waffle House. To me, it represents a place where you can go and at any time you're going to see multiple different representations of what it means to be in America in 2024. For example, you can go to the Waffle House on a Sunday morning quite early and you'll see families that are having a breakfast on their way to church. And you'll see a rowdy table of people that have been out all night and they're at the Waffle House to have, you know, eggs and bacon and waffles and whatnot and coffee on their way home from the party. And it feels affordable and accessible. And the Waffle House concept architecturally is interesting because it's a chain and they use the exact same layout plan for all of the Waffle Houses. And there's something very comforting to me about that, but also freaky. The idea of, you know, apartment complexes and houses being built in suburbia and all of that mimicking each other. But the Waffle House to me is a great representation of what people are eating in America, and that kind of jumps off into other references, looking at like advertisements for Lunchables and pre-packaged meals juxtaposed with, you know, advertisements of farming and good, clean, healthy food. And then looking at like agricultural photographs by photographers like Dorothea Lange and, you know, all of that together really interests me. Other references by nature of studying art history are Dutch still lives from like Peter Bruegel the Elder, even Caravaggio, but looking at paintings that show food and abundance and applying that to, if I'm going to set up a still life, using that as the reference rather than an Irving Penn still life, I'm more drawn to the painting side of things. And I was thinking about this too, the idea of, I feel sometimes a bit desensitized to photography, like Susan Sontag and the idea of like looking at images of war and not feeling as much because of that, and then going and looking at a painting of a war scene and having a much more emotional and visceral reaction to that. And so I think after studying her work and feeling that way in university, I definitely am much more drawn to painting as a reference for a lot of my work or other art mediums, like conceptual art, or like the artist Rikrit Triravana, who has used food and participation and cooking in gallery spaces or other spaces as performance. So he'll make pad thai and he'll cook and people will come and that'll be the show. He is a huge reference for me. I had the opportunity to sit in on one of his, he teaches a course at Columbia, and I had the opportunity to partake in one of the classes where it was in a community garden in the East Village, New York. And we were cooking outside in the garden and making sculptures out of found materials there and food and rocks and just all of it. So that is very important to my work. And I love the paintings of Cecily Brown. I think she's my favorite painter, favorite artist at the moment, and has been for quite a long time. She had a show at the Met recently, and I spent a lot of time there looking. There's a Japanese photographer who did a project on food. It's this one book I own that I sourced at my favorite bookstore in New York called Dashwood Books. And his name is, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, but it's Kishin Shinoyama. Yeah. And the book is called Shoku, Food. It's from 1993. It's these insane macro images of, you know, a shrimp that's being dropped in hot oil and it's sizzling and fiery, and then, you know, glossy poached fruit sitting on aluminum foil. It's so tied in and wet and juicy, and it's almost erotic, actually, some of the photos, but it's a different way of looking at food and color. And I'm pretty sure most of his other work was fashion and other subjects. And I found this book and it's been, you know, my most prized possession. It's, the book itself is wrapped in like this kind of gold leaf foil, and it has all these different encasings. So the act of opening it too is kind of like breaking into a meal. Like you're getting through it and then you finally open it up and you're instantly, bam, hit with all these visceral images of food tied in, very colorful and shiny and glossy. So that's a huge inspo. I think not being technically trained, not having gone to school for photography, or even having studied it in an academic setting that was theory-based, I have gone through a lot of trial and error in my practice, technically speaking, of teaching myself how to use equipment, and maybe sometimes teaching myself how to use it to some that are correctly trained as incorrect or the wrong way to light. And that has achieved a specific effect and lighting that works in these really crazy volatile environments, like a kitchen that's all stainless steel and reflective and shiny. And how do I light a space like that if it needs to be lit? Am I gonna, you know, use an on-camera flash or something off, or what's gonna happen? And it's different every time. So I think the approach is not planned. I come with what I need and what I think I need, but I often use found materials in the space to adapt how I shoot. So if I'm lighting something, I'll grab sheets of white parchment paper or brown parchment paper, and I'll use that as diffusion to tape over my light, and kind of being nimble in my way of shooting, trying to pare down with the amount of gear that I use and really just focus on what I'm seeing and what the best material and medium is to document that. But and not having gone to school, you know, full transparency, I've shot commercial jobs where I've been asked to do something from the client and had zero idea how to technically get that done. So, you know, I'll go in the other room or I'll go in the bathroom for 5 minutes. I'll look on my phone on YouTube. I'll look it up. I'll watch a video and then I'll walk back out there and I'll do it. So I think it's important that you don't have to go to school and to have access to those resources to be a photographer or any kind of artist. I mean, granted, of course, there's many benefits to doing that. So there are days when I wish that I had, but you know, my kind of chaotic style of shooting sometimes would not work if I had had that more structured education and training in material and theory. I also think my approach is very open. It depends on my mood, the space, the subject, ultimately the season and color a lot of the time of what's already there and what I've brought with me. But my personal approach to photography and how it's changed, there's always been the follow through of it being about collaboration more and more from when I started. And I think I began much more as a fly on the wall in an insular way of documenting the things that I was cooking myself, or I would, you know, be shooting an editorial and kind of come in with an idea of what I wanted to do a little bit. And of course it would change, but now it's much more fluid and open. I want the image not to just be mine, but I want it to reflect how the subject also sees himself in a way. And that's done through conversation and, you know, making sure that I have enough time to prep before I'm actually making the photo. Not always possible due to constraints, but that's an ideal situation for me, no matter what the subject is of what I'm shooting. And it's kind of an attempt to feel like there's a trust and a truth in the image, or like there's an attempt to be more authentic by getting to know what it is I'm doing beforehand. But the process is really research heavy and conceptual, where I'm preparing and looking at references before I go in. And when I was cooking in the restaurant, I would take all of these meticulous notes, and I have all these notebooks from that time when I was learning recipes. And to do that, I was making drawings of each plate that I had to make. And I would be drawing a salad according to height and scale and identifying how to garnish it. And then that led to me picking up the camera and wanting to go to the next step from it just being this 2D drawing to a full photograph with color. But the constraints and costs also of shooting film often play a huge role in how I work. And I'm very aware of that. And I think it also often forces me to make stronger imagery because I'm pulled back. I'm not shooting a million different frames and then deciding which one is the best. I'm waiting for that moment when something's about to sizzle in the pan and I'm waiting and I'm like gonna grab it then and there, and I'm not gonna waste the film prior to that and shooting before that moment. But I know that that moment's gonna happen and when it's gonna happen just because I worked in restaurants. But it's about risk-taking in the storytelling process and not being afraid. And more I wanna emphasize that in my work and be less timid, less of a fly on the wall, and more kind of open to jumping in, even if it's intimidating to be in those spaces. To me, the kitchen is like a ballet. It is a ballet. The people working in the kitchen are doing this dance where they're seamlessly moving through each other, next to each other, and the obstacles are high stress, a hot plate that's being pulled out of an oven, a knife is chopping something very fast. There's this way of watching people move and their communication that is optimizing their movements and their use of their voice to be as efficient and direct as possible. How to move in a kitchen is, you know, the language of saying behind and corner and all of those things. To not know that and then to go into that space, I think you're not going to be able to get to position yourself in order to get those moments and shots that happen so fast. Such a fast dance. So yeah, I love thinking about that. It wasn't planned, it just happened. And I don't know why, still. But I remember cleaning out a box of things at my parents' apartment and finding an old camera that I had used point and shoot with when I was younger. Actually, I don't know if any of this is relevant, but ultimately it really wasn't planned. We can start from there. And I felt that the drawings that I was making at the time documenting how to plate dishes and recipes and whatnot, I wasn't fully satisfied with them. I wanted to see them in the way that I was envisioning them in my head. And moving to photography was the natural next step. So I brought in a camera to work one day. I came in early. I went into the walk-in. I took photos of lettuce that was dying. I took photos of things that you don't often see in food photography, or the things often that restaurants often don't want to show, the nitty gritty, the behind the scenes, the unpolished. And I wanted to take images of the hands and the shoes and the faces of the people working in back of house. All of them, from the chef to the dishwasher, the cooks, every person involved, to a prep cook or someone delivering asparagus on a truck that has a relationship with a restaurant. And so that started, and I got the film back. It just, every amount of money that I would make after paying my rent from work would go into buying film and shooting. And it happened just on accident. But it became clear to me that I had to make a choice. You know, I would be cooking on the line, I would be building something, and I would want to reach up. I would keep my camera tucked above my station on a shelf behind plates, a stack of plates, and I would reach up and grab it and get a quick shot after whatever I had made was ready to be sent to the table or to shoot another moment that was happening in the kitchen. But I was reaching up too much and grabbing my camera, and it slowed me down a little bit. It was not appropriate at a certain point to be doing that. And I had to take that jump, and I stopped cooking, but not really, because in that transition especially, I would go and stage or intern for a day at another restaurant and bring a camera with me, but I would participate in the prep work. Kind of like method acting, which is how I often describe it, where I come in, I put on an apron, I wear my kitchen shoes, and it's as if I'm training to work there. Whenever possible, I do that also first without a camera, with just my hands and a notebook maybe. And I'm writing down and I'm drawing shots that coming back and making with the camera, or if it's in the same day, I'm bringing my camera out in the second half. And that process is very present now whenever possible when I'm shooting a cookbook, for example. I have two cookbooks coming out that I documented this year. One's coming out in the spring, and it was shot in Australia and in Rome. And during that process, I worked at the restaurant of the chef whose book it is for a few nights, you know, without the camera, and just during service, plating and helping her on the pass. After doing that, I was able to realize in her story and in her food what are the shots that need to be taken in order to contextualize her recipes in the cookbook in a way that aren't just beautiful overhead shots of plates of food, but the action and the chaos, the dance that happens. So that method acting process still plays a huge role in my work now and in my desire to still have one leg in the kitchen and not let go of it completely. I came back to Printing in the Darkroom last year, and it's changed my process in the way that I see color and the way that print and holding an image and manipulating it physically has changed. Yeah, just my process and the way that I see. I think there's a patience and an OCD kind of part of me that is really at odds, very meticulous and specific with color and my materials, the way that I work. I think you see that in my handwriting and my notebooks. It's very controlling, and a lot of my subjects are free and I can't control them. It's not in studio, still life, staged. So learning how to add in that desire in the post-production process through printing in the darkroom has allowed me to be at peace with that in a different way and to really see there's so much color in food, and to bring that forward in the darkroom is magic. It's like a miracle to me. And it goes back into the nostalgia for the way that I grew up with a darkroom at home. The smell, the energy of being by yourself, forced to be alone in the dark, the patience of waiting from when it's going through to when it's coming out, those minutes of anticipation have taught me a lot about patience in general in the kitchen and how I shoot. I was printing actually in Paris last summer, and that's where I kind of got the hunger to, I mean, I had printed a tiny bit black and white in a summer program once or something when I was younger, but that doesn't matter. It's not relevant. It's more just that starting to do that here in a lab that was in French. And it was funny. I remember my first time printing in Paris, and I was very shy to put my images up on the wall where all the other people there printing. I mean, no one's looking that closely, but people look. And there's a little curiosity, even if it's supposed to be a bit of a private moment where you have, you know, you have your darkroom, you have your little wall with magnet space. And I put my images up and I walked around the room, and every other photographer there was printing fashion photography. And I was printing very strange photos I had made in a kitchen that was kind of falling apart. It was very interesting to just be trying to print something that in the context of the lab, it did not fit in. And I felt very shy about what I was doing and a little secretive, that I was embarrassed in a way. And I think that feeling, I don't feel that way anymore, but that feeling of going into the dark and making something and manipulating your work, it's very rare and unique to have that and to carve out the time to do that and to fail, to have it not work, to have to go back in and spend hours and time, and you know, you run out of paper and the emulsion is different, and all of those constraints make the actual final print so much more gratifying. And I'm often printing to make the final print, not to make an image that I can then scan and manipulate so I can post it. That's not the point for me, which I know is the case, and it's great for a lot of other photographers working in this way, but I want to get that last print of a box of radicchio that's sitting in cardboard, and there's sun, but it's also half in shade, and I need to burn half of the image and go through that process to bring forward the pink of the radicchio and the green of the leeks and all of that. It's a struggle, and it's so gratifying. I love printing, but it's a privilege. It's a privilege to print, and it's often, it's expensive. And so again, you know, those constraints make it rare and I do it when possible, but it's often not possible, so. I don't know why I'm drawn to hands. I think after spending so much time using them, typing essays and papers or handwriting notes, I wanted to experiment and be really free with how I use my hands. It's a very strange way to say it, but I graduated and I was like, I want to do ceramics. I want to do something where I'm participating and using my fingers to create an object or something three-dimensional that can be utilized or consumed. And that's what happened when I started working in this restaurant called Lalu when I moved back to New York, and the chef was saying, okay, like, you have to plate the salad for height. It has to be taller. And manipulating that through the use of hands, but, you know, that is a jumping off point for just thinking about the hands of cooks. It's so fascinating. They're dry, short nails, they have burns, they're swollen, they're red. It's this kind of object that, you know, looking at the hands of cooks is, even the hand of a dishwasher, it's being exposed to hot water, all of that working hand, there's something important in highlighting that and looking at that rather than looking at, you know, what the hands are just making, but actually, like, what is behind that? Who's creating it? And when I was still working as a cook, I constantly wanted to be faster, to be quicker in using my hands and more nimble. And I love looking at chefs' hands moving so fast. That, in a micro scale, is like a ballet to watch, you know, someone is making a sauce and then they're really quickly plating four dishes, using that sauce to finish it with, and these kind of fast movements, and then also really strong hands. Like, you have to be able to hold a stack of plates and all these things. There's a real emphasis on how important hands are in order to work in the kitchen. But that just kind of, yeah, goes into the intimacy of cooking for me, and intimacy in general with imagery. Even if I'm shooting something that's fashion or whatnot, I'm always looking at hands and looking for ways to incorporate them in a shot. I think I use many different types of lighting in my images. Natural light, direct hard flash, or a flash with diffusion on it that's off camera, all these different types of lighting scenarios. But for me, direct flash can really unravel the ingredient or the plate or what's happening and show the true and accurate colors in a way that sometimes can be a bit more muddied in other types of lighting. So it's definitely an advantage if I'm shooting at night, especially, and trying to capture the rock and roll in the kitchen. I think it gives an edge that you don't have when there's a softer look that also isn't a lot of older food photography. But kind of going off of that hard flash, I do feel that it's important not to make things too hot when shooting in that way, and to blow out or create too much hot spot. It's tricky, especially shooting hard flash in a kitchen with so many reflective surfaces, but it gives a different quality to the colors and the textures that I'm hoping will come through in that moment. And granted, I don't know if they will. And so sometimes I'm using different types of lighting and I get back the film and I go with whichever one feels closest to the truth of what it looked like when I was there shooting it. But flash is a great tool that I utilize quite often, and one that I used at the beginning a lot because I don't have to stop and stage. I can just grab and go when shooting. the balance between still and chaos is essential to capturing the entirety of what's happening. And that, again, applies in the restaurant, but also in anything. If it's a model that's still in pose, or I'm asking them to move on set and I'm trying to capture that motion, it's important to me to get both sides in a full story and not just have images that reflect one specific side or style. It's changing. And I think for me, I hope that's the future of playing more and more with the types of images that I make and the tools that I can use to capture the different elements of what's happening. I'm very interested in still the context of food in some ways, but in a different environment instead of, you know, the classical kitchen, but in education or in government or federally regulated spaces like food in prisons, food in public schools. What are people eating? Why? Where does it come from? Food on the farm. What's the politics behind this? And I'm working on a project, and I'm not going to say too much on it now, but just longer term of what are people being fed, especially in the States compared to a country like France, and how is it being regulated, but also how is it having an effect on students from a very young age and the socioeconomic disparities between what people have access to eat and then what they're, you know, you go to McDonald's, you get a burger, and that's to some, that's the best thing that they can afford to have, or that's in their mind their ideal meal because of how much salt is in it. So kind of looking at food from a different perspective in that context is something I would love to photograph stories about. But I'm fascinated by a lot of things in terms of farming and production, even industrial work, building, all of that, like documenting spaces and places where things are being produced and made, and there's work being done in a social context without it being implicitly documentary style photography, but coming in with the kitchen perspective and shooting that. I have been working on my first book/zine because I want it to feel relaxed and informal in the way that these kitchen spaces feel. And I'm excited for its soft cover and all of that. And so I'm excited for the subjects to look at the book when it comes out in April. Because really, the book is for the cooks, the dishwashers, the prep cooks, everyone, the bartenders, everyone working in service that I've been fortunate to have documented. And it's a collection of images that aren't just food related, but they're also very intimate and personal to me. They're photographs of my parents. There's a photograph of my grandmother drinking a milkshake at the fast food chain Friendly's that I grew up going to. There are spaces in the book that are busy and full, and then there are lonely spaces. Originally, when the publisher approached me, I wasn't ready to make a book. This was like a year ago. And we spoke again in the fall, and I felt excited about the opportunity to make something in print, which is so important to my references and the way that I work and live by looking at objects. And he talked about it being a book not just of my food photography, but of other imagery as well. And at first I was hesitant to make something that put into conversation all of these different types of images. I thought it wouldn't make sense or that it wouldn't work. And so I tried at first to do an edit of just food photographs, and it didn't feel as though it told a complete story of my life and my way of working and the story of what it means to be in the restaurant. There are other aspects that are personal and intimate and private. And so I went back and we did an edit together of photos of my parents, photos of friends, empty crates of, or full and empty crates of lettuce busting out, the chaos, all of that. So the book tells the story of the images that I've made, both personal and private, and then those public or commissioned, all in conversation with one another. And I spent a lot of time working on the sequencing, especially the pairing between spreads of color, texture, season, all of that. And the book hopefully is relatable to others working in this way. It's for the restaurants, for those people. But I'm excited for the images to live in a tangible form. And I think the lonely still photographs represent one side of what I do, and then the fast, chaotic, motion, blurry images. There's photos of chefs tasting a sauce and their hands are dragging across the page and they're shiny and glossy. And then you have a spread of a still table with bowls of fruit and produce in a beautiful home that has glass walls, and you see out, you see into the nature, you see the trees, the light is soft and sunny, and there's all different types of scenarios going on. And the technical side of it too is there's images with flash, with natural light, and they're all in conversation with each other. And I hope that people can relate to these, even if you're not a cook. If you like to eat, you can jump in and find something relatable. So I'm just excited about that and to put something out there into the world. You know, I'm nervous. It's my first tangible book, so hopefully it won't be the last. When I asked my mom to write something about the images and to write a short little essay, she wrote about a short story, a memory of her kind of a long time ago with some friends digging for clams. And so one of the lines, I'll read it out, one of the lines in the short story essay. Should I just read a few lines of it? Is that okay? So it starts, it's two sections called, I ended up titling the book Digging for Clams after reading the essay. So, we were nine for two nights on the peninsula. T knew the coastline and took us down roads, not on any map. We dug for clams the size of melons and cooked them on fires made from driftwood. We swam for hours in the salt water under a scorching sun. At night, almost sick from exhaustion and heat, we lay on blankets and stared up at a clear Pacific sky. Ghost stories were told, guitars played, backs rubbed, jealousies ignited, possible futures whispered. Someone cried. We slept. In the morning, Elle fried eggs and sausage and bruise-colored pans and tea made campfire coffee. Some of us walked up the beach while others sat writing and drawing in journals. By noon, crammed into two vehicles, we drove north along the shore and across the border. And then the second part talks about in relation directly to the images in the book, but I love clams and I love melons, and there's images of seafood. I'm always shooting, you know, clams and scallops and oysters, and things from the sea are salty. I love salt. I feel like digging for clams is open-ended, but also kind of weighed down in the image of consuming and clams being, I don't know, a metaphor for so many, you know, allegorical things in relationship to food, and also to, you know, like in the Bible, there are things about the sea and all of that. So I wasn't really trying to reference all of that, but thinking about it now in this exact moment, I feel like digging for clams also just connects to, you know, the labor that goes in to the food that we eat. And clams are not the easiest thing to access and to prepare, but if they are done simply and properly, they're so delicious. I love clams. And yeah, I don't know. It just came to me. I pulled it out of the text that she wrote, and it felt right. The photography that I'm making now, I wonder where it will go, but I think it will inevitably change also as the way that we eat changes in ways that are uncontrollable with global warming and access to ingredients. I hope this is just the beginning. I hope I'm 25 and I'm just excited to be telling more and more stories now and in the future, while also honoring what comes before us, you know, how ingredients have existed for, you know, so long in time, and how they were used back then and how they're being used now is very interesting to me. But I think time just generally is so crucial in how I work, where I have all of these constraints and limitations, be it the time I have in the restaurant to shoot or the time I have for a commercial job to deliver images, all of that, I'm working against the clock. I'm working against the clock when shooting a dish that's been plated because it's going to die in X amount of time before it will still look fresh. I'm not working with fake food and doing that. But also I would love to. I think that's so fascinating, you know, the fake food where you walk around a neighborhood and there's restaurants that have in the windows, you know, all the little mini foods that are showcasing what they're cooking in the back. But that veers away from the idea of time. It's really, I don't know, time is important. I just started this, but I already feel like I have so much more that I want to say and do and experience and taste. And it's going very fast and it's ever changing. But I think staying true to telling stories and trying to be as collaborative as possible and taking the time to do that will enable future work to say something new and different. And slowing down, you know, I'm going so fast and I need to slow down. I need to spend more time in the dark room. I need to sit down, have a meal, you know, do all of that. So community and time is so critical to the image making process and the collaboration. You know, it's special to have documented these people in the kitchen and to then go back and visit them, and the relationships just start from there. To document, you know, friends of mine that cook and to shoot their food in different contexts again and again and again is an exercise in challenging what I've done before. And also seeing how their food is changing as time passes. But I'm in a rush, always.
Merci d'avoir écouté ce podcast. Vous pouvez retrouver tous les épisodes de Vision sur les plateformes de podcast, de Spotify en passant par Deezer, Apple Podcast, et nos actualités sur notre site vision.photo, sur notre Instagram, @podcastvision. Si vous avez quelques secondes pour noter et laisser votre avis, ça nous aide aussi beaucoup. À très vite pour parler de photographie.